So I'm Sue Hanley. I want to thank you all for coming because I woke up in the middle of the night thinking that no one would be here. So you are now all my very best friends. So I really, really appreciate this. So as people are coming in, we'll let them come on down. Make me feel loved. All right, so I'm going to get started so that way we have more time for questions. So we're going to talk about user adoption, and the title of my presentation is Unlocking the Secrets of User Adoption Success. And I have 12 of them, but that's not what the secret is. But we had a little crisis last week, so I think I have a 13th. So I'll share with you an up-to-the-minute new secret. So just so you know, consultants can get something screwed up too that will cause some crises. So I'll give you a new one. So we'll have a baker's dozen of user adoption secrets. So when I think of user adoption, I think it's really about being prepared. And I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but the Federal Emergency Management Agency in the United States issued a preparation document to help people be prepared for an emergency disaster that they were convinced that we needed to be prepared for. And I'll share a little bit about that. And yes, you are right. It is the zombie apocalypse. So this is what FEMA was worried about in May of 2011, and if you don't believe me, this is literally from the FEMA website. So user adoption, users, sometimes we think of our users, maybe that they are zombies and they are going to attack us. Usually not, and we like to create a nice environment, but I think one way to think about adoption is to be prepared not just for zombies, but for users interacting with your system. So. But I want to just sort of challenge something for the moment and just make sure that we're all on the same page. Because when I think about do we really want user adoption or user engagement, whatever you want to call it, I'm not really sure. I actually think that I'd like to ask a different question. I think what we should really focus on, what I want to focus on, sorry, and what I think you guys really want to focus on is results. Not just are people sort of checking into the system, but are we using our solution to move the needle, to drive real, meaningful business value? That's the true measure of value, not if we're counting things like people logging on. And you know, there's the cheater user adoption. If you set everyone's homepage to be SharePoint, so then they open the browser, they open up SharePoint. I mean, that's cheating. That means you have 100% adoption, but that doesn't really count. So I think what we want to look for is meaningful business results, and by that I mean things like the time it takes to train a new employee, increasing customer satisfaction. I mean, the things that you're really already focused on and already measuring. And what we want to do, I think, is think of user adoption as really a means to an end. And what we really want to focus on is business results. And that's really the first secret. So we haven't even met yet, and I just shared the first secret. So adoption isn't the end game. Business results really are. So you probably want to know. So I would like you, now that you're all here, which I'm so grateful about, to adopt me. So I will tell you a little bit about why I'm here. So I've written a couple of books about SharePoint. The purple one, by the way, this is, I guess I'd call it optimistic cover. So at the moment, the blue one is about 2007, the green one is about 2010, and I have two copies to give away at the end. And I want the next edition to be purple. And we're kind of debating what the color should be right now, so I've chosen to make it purple. So you guys can say, if you run into Chris and Scott, just say you vote for purple, and that will be really great. Our next edition book is going to probably come out in the first half of next year. The strategy chapter is going to be released most likely for free. So pay attention to my website, and I think sometime in the next 4 months that strategy will be available. Okay, so my area of expertise, you can't ask me any technical questions. The folks from Bell are going to play buzzword bingo if I do anything technical. See, I know, I remembered. So I'm not going to, and you can see, I don't really know anything about technical stuff, so you couldn't ask me that anyways. So I spend all of my time in the people side of the SharePoint and portal world. I was one of the very first directors of knowledge management, so although I am a consultant now, I come by all the battle scars because they were very hard fought, because I was responsible for implementing collaboration and intranet solutions in my 9,000-person consulting firm. So I spend all of my time in that space. I have my own firm now, but prior to that, I led the national portal practice for Dell. And before that, I was the director of knowledge management at AMS. And before that, I was a consultant. And if you did ask me to program, it would have to be in COBOL or Fortran. So here's how you can get me, and this is really why I work. Those are the three kids. I'm happy to say they are. Two out of the three are off the payroll. That would be Brian and Jamie. And the little guy is a junior in college and is actually threatening to graduate in 3.5 years, so I may not need to sell as many books. So, all right. It's not so little anymore. All right, so let's talk a little bit about why is user adoption just so hard. So the challenge, of course, and the solutions that we typically build with SharePoint are not really like general ledger or accounts payable, where you have no choice but to use the system. We're building solutions that are more in the squishy space. We call them collaboration. We may call them knowledge management, all that kind of stuff. So one challenge we have is that whether or not, whatever we're going to call it, adoption rarely happens all at once. More importantly, because we're not the general ledger system and you don't have to use us, we have to answer the question, what's in it for me? And I always like to say everyone in your organization is listening to the same radio station, WIIFM. And your job, if you want to get them to pay attention to what you're doing, is to make sure that you're playing the music that they want to hear. And then finally, and this is the most important thing, the solution has to be worth adopting. So I can tell you all kinds of horror stories about in the early days of knowledge management when we built all these systems thinking that, oh my God, we'll build it and people will come. And we never really engaged people in what they really wanted. And basically what you have is this solution that has nothing to do with the business problem. And I think that's really the next secret. Adoptable solutions solve problems. You have to understand where is the user in pain? Where are the business people in pain? And by the way, I'm married to a dentist, so this is absolutely the appropriate picture. We need to make sure that if we're building a solution, it addresses the pain that our user has. So I would like to argue that features do not create user adoption. Business problems, business solutions create user adoption. But there are some really engaging features in SharePoint 2013, so I want to show you a couple of my favorite ones, and then things that you can do. So likes and ratings are a way to encourage people to engage with the solution. I think it's a great thing if it's in the right context. Some contexts we like sort of the recognition, reputation points. This does not always work in all kinds of communities. I'm working with a TAP client, an early adopter client right now, and they have told me if we don't turn this off, they are not going to play. Tends to work best in technical environments where, in fact, there is one right answer to a question, and so building reputation points makes a difference. Also tends to work better when there's hundreds of people participating in the community as opposed to a small group. But opportunities. So this I completely stole from one of my favorite presentations last year, which is this is the Findometer that Vancity uses in their search results. So you can basically interact with search and tell the intranet team whether or not search worked for you. And you have the option of submitting what you were trying to do and what you were hoping for and getting a human being to reply to you. Behind this is just a SharePoint list. But here's what's really important. Giving people an opportunity to interact with the solution and give feedback allows people to become engaged. And I actually previewed this presentation for a friend of mine who is a clinical psychologist, and she said that the most important thing about allowing feedback is giving people a voice. You actually don't always have to do something about it, but you absolutely have to listen and give people an opportunity to give you feedback. The other thing I really love, a feature that I know your users will love, is that if you don't get search results, there are helpful hints built in to the search results screen. So this didn't work in the preview. Hopefully it works in RTM. But basically, one of the reasons people often find challenges in finding information is that they don't understand how to write a good query. And I debate with people whether or not training people in how to search is a way to overcome some adoption issues. A lot of people don't agree that you can train people in anything. I think actually training people in search is a gift, because you train people in search how to write a better query, and they can take that home with them and use it in their Google searches on the web. So I think having search, like, did you try, if you need less information, use capital A-N-D between your two words. If you want more, use capital OR, remember to capitalize. Things that help people learn about how to write better queries will help them engage and get a more positive result. And then I think search, obviously, that works is critically important. So I have some things I absolutely love about SharePoint 2013 search. You can see what's inside when you hover over search results. Metadata preview. I'm an information architect by trade, so I don't. I prefer that we not use the F word, folders. And being able to see the metadata, I think, is really important. Things like date last edited, count of views, headings in your document, and then my personal favorite is being able to go to the library in which a document was found. So if you think you're kind of in the right place, finding the context of where that lives is also a very engaging feature. That's it. No more SharePoint 2013. Now I'm going to really talk about user adoption. And if you'll go to Chris Bortlick's session, which follows mine, I think I was told this is called pimping his session. He's going to do a deep dive into more specific features of SharePoint 2013. So content, though, you can focus on. So this has nothing to do with which version of SharePoint you're using, but engaging content, things that are well-written, text that is easy to scan. This link up here, I wrote a little document for one of my clients that I've posted to my website, and there's the little short URL, sort of how to write great content for SharePoint. Writing for the web is not the same as writing for print, for consumption in a document. And if you're writing to encourage people to get to your content, you really want to write things in a way that helps them quickly scan the information. So it's writing more like a journalist. So some helpful hints are in this document. This presentation is available, so don't worry about it. You don't have to write it all down. Making sure the content is accurate, useful, timely, relevant. That's my other area of passion. That's governance, or effectively known as the G word, because I will not debate whether that's the right term or the wrong term. I think it's really more about guidance, whatever. Anyways, making sure that your content is correct and accurate is critically important. And that, again, if it's engaging content, it will help user adoption. And then, of course, my favorite, moving parts. So, and making sure that you're focused on the point. And here's secret number three. Adoption is really contextual. And I alluded to that with the what's in it for me. But you really do have to think about the groups of users that you have and what will make this solution meaningful in their business role. So I'm going to name adoption in four words. I sort of liken this to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. You know, first you take care of the basic food and shelter needs, and only then, after you've solved that, you can go higher up the food chain. So I do think that the first thing you want to think about in terms of adoption is, how are you addressing my personal pain? So solve a problem that I have, and I will definitely be, I might try your little system. Once you've got me focused, then I'm actually more willing to do something that actually helps people outside of me, like my work family or my team. Then, my next area of influence or the things that I care about are things that go beyond my immediate team. And if I'm happy and my team is happy, I'm more willing to extend my interest in this new system that you're giving me to the broader company. But even if everybody becomes happy, and if you're solving a problem that addresses everybody, all of your messaging should be focused and targeted. Again, if you're speaking directly to me and my business problem, I'd be much more interested in engaging with your solution. Oh, gosh. Okay. So this sounds really hard, because now we have to address every single person. We have to make it all talk. We have to make it talk to them. We have to make everybody feel like we're really all about them. So it does seem really complicated, but this is secret number four. We can prepare. So before I show you examples, so by the way, most people collect things like stamps or coins or teapots. I collect user adoption stories. So I'm hoping that at some point in our conversation towards the end, you'll share yours so that I can start telling your story the next time I talk about user adoption. So you can prepare. And before I get to the practical examples, because I promise you that's what I really want to share is all those stories, I want to do just a teeny bit of why is it so hard to get people to adopt new technologies. So number one, you're asking me to do something new, and I'm not necessarily going to see the benefits immediately. So delayed gratification is an important concept just to think about as you're planning adoption. Second of all, you've just asked me to try something new, and there's no guarantees this is going to get me home quicker so that I can play with the kids and the dogs after work. There's nothing in it that really guarantees that if I cooperate and add all the metadata you told me to add, that this is going to make a difference in my life. And finally, the results are often very, very difficult to measure. So this is kind of the squishy space of how do we do metrics for these collaborative solutions that have really not so obvious benefits, at least not immediately. And so I'm already kind of predisposed to think this is really, really hard. So not only that, but a very smart guy at Harvard did some interesting research about what it takes to get people to really make the leap into a new technology. And what his research says is that the following, that a new product to be immediately adopted has to be 9 times better than that with which it is replacing. So if you're inventing Facebook and there's no other way to talk to all of your friends at once, that's clearly 9 times better. But that's already been invented. And so I doubt that that's what you're doing in your organization. But if you are, God bless you. And I really want you to tell us all what that is so that we can all do it. So I don't want you to scare you off that says that your solution has to be 9 times better than that which you're replacing. But it does mean you want to start paying attention to the fact that it's not necessarily going to be instant or obvious or easy because it's hard to do a 9 times better system. And that leads right into secret number 5. And that is that really what you're asking people to do is change, and change is really hard. So why is it so hard? Well, first of all, I'm a consultant. I've been a consultant for 35 years, and I cannot tell you how many times I have heard these things. So these are all quotes I've heard all the time. This is how we've always done it, and it works for me. Anyone heard that one before? Oh, good. So other people besides me. And this is the one they don't say this out loud, but I know this is what they're thinking. I'm not really broken. Why are you trying to fix me? In other words, it's working for me. I don't really need that. I don't mean this. And so I don't know if you've heard this story, but how many psychiatrists does it take to change a light bulb? Only one, but the light bulb really has to want to change. And I think you got to think about that in the context of change. And so, again, what's in it for me? Oftentimes, we roll out these wonderful collaboration solutions and brand new intranets, and you get the CEO to do their thing and describe what the great thing it is going to be for the company, and everybody gets that, but they still haven't translated that to what's really in it for me. So it's okay for them, but what's in it for me? So one of the things you want to think about is the degree of change is actually, what you want to think about in your adoption plan is how much are you actually asking people to change with this new wonderful solution you're building. And I think there's two dimensions to think about. So so on the y-axis, we're talking about the degree of change, and the x-axis is the focus of your adoption plan. If what you are really doing is giving people a new way of doing something they were already doing, like basically building a new intranet with nothing different, then your adoption plan should spend a lot of time focused on communications and training, because that's really what people need to get over the hurdle of trying something new. But if you are now trying to roll out social features when you were never doing that before, and things are very different for how people are going to interact, then I think the focus of your adoption plan needs to be much more around how are we going to engage the users in this new system. So one way to think about change and the pain of change is to kind of ease into it. So I often think about organizations having something like organizational attention deficit disorder, I mean, we can really only focus on a couple of big things in the organization. So one of the ways to encourage adoption is to make sure that your solution is focused around something that the organization is already really cares about. So wrap your change into something that is already part of the big organizational change. Another great way to get people to change what they're currently doing is to keep it very, very simple. So start with something that you can ease into, keep it simple, keep it small, and consider the culture of your organization. And one thing I've learned in being a consultant and being responsible for this for so long is that every organization has their own personality, just like we all have our own personality. And while sometimes what we're trying to do is disrupt a little of that culture, you still have to introduce new technology in a way that will help people remain comfortable in the current environment. The other thing that's kind of trending in the concept of user adoption is to not necessarily try and throw every single new feature all at once, the Big Bang theory of new solutions, and rather consider the long wow, sort of a steady state of continuous improvement, or making people aware of features at the point that they're ready to use them, not because you're just sort of throwing that at them and asking them to drink from a fire hose. I read some research that talked about it takes on average 66 days for people to develop a new habit. So the other thing I think you can do for yourself is just don't put yourself under so much pressure that everybody has to adopt immediately, and think about giving yourself some time, giving people, promoting and communicating and over-communicating for that first 66 days at least to try to get sort of a majority of people engaged in your system. How many people know who that is? Okay, so now I know when you were born. So if you were born after about 19, you have to be born about after 1972, 73, or you wouldn't know who this guy is. So he is actually very key to your user adoption strategy. So let's see if I can make this play. So his name is Mikey, and can we do it?
Look at this stuff. Some cereal. It's supposed to be good for you. Did you try it?
I'm not gonna try it. You try it.
I'm not gonna try it.
Let's get Mikey.
Yeah.
He won't eat it. He hates everything. He likes it. Hey, Mikey.
When you bring life home, don't tell the kids it's one of those nutritional cereals you've been trying to get them to eat. You're the only one who has to know.
So Life cereal is a tradition, a nutritional cereal. Supposedly, it's actually loaded with sugar. But back in the 70s, this was considered, the optimal nutrition for your children. And Mikey is that guy in the organization who really doesn't want to play. And sometimes finding your Mikey, like if Mikey likes it, Mikey is usually an influential person who doesn't. If you find a Mikey who is an influential person who doesn't want to play, that Mikey, or Michelle, whatever, can be very key to your user adoption strategy. Get Mikey to like it, and everyone will like it. And when I was grabbing this clip to prepare this presentation, literally like 2 weeks ago, there was an article in Parade magazine where someone asked, whatever happened to the guy that played Mikey? Someone saw that article. 44 years old, and he still eats Life cereal, but his kids like Apple Jacks. So Mikey has been in 250 commercials since this one. So when you think about your user adoption strategy, think about Mikey, because I think he's important. So these are this is Jamie and Corey. Unless you think that your kids have to be in car seats to fall asleep when you put them in the car, they're 20 and 25. And this was our last summer's vacation. So the other thing you want to think about when it comes to user adoption, I was going to say training, but I actually think it's not necessarily just training. It's about making people comfortable with what you're asking them to do. So it isn't just teaching them what to do. It's sort of getting them comfortable around the change that you're asking them to make. So having a roadmap for training that is focused on increasing user comfort with the new technology, I think will help encourage user adoption. So a couple things to remember, which I'm sure you guys already know. When it comes to SharePoint, don't assume it's intuitive. I am constantly being challenged that you have to build, Sue, what we really want is an intuitive intranet where everybody just knows what to do. Intuitive is in the eye of the beholder. And it's very, very difficult to, you know, get the check mark for this is intuitive, unless you're really focused from not on sort of what does that mean to you, but what is the problem you're trying to solve and how can I help you solve that business problem. So don't assume it's intuitive, and also don't assume that one size fits all. When it comes to increasing comfort, you do have to pay attention to who am I trying to train, who needs to learn this, and what do they need to know. Anyone work in a law firm? Okay, well, you don't train the lawyers the same. Well, actually, you really can't train the lawyers. You have to train their assistants, let's be real. And also, don't try to train all at once. This is really, I think, one of the theories. I think what the long wow theory of adoption is aligned to is that when you think about SharePoint and how much there is to learn, there's no possible way any user who's got a day job is going to be able to consume all of the features and functions in any one sitting. Adult learners don't learn that way. Any learner, no matter how they learn, and you do want to think about adapting to their learning style, needs to interact in some way to retain information. So trying to make people drink from a fire hose when you're trying to train for SharePoint is almost always a recipe for disaster. And there may be some people who can afford to take 4 days away from their day job to go take all of those SharePoint training classes, but in most organizations, that's not going to happen. And the best way for adults to learn is actually just at the moment that they need to know. So just in time is what you really are going to try to focus on to encourage users to adopt. But, so you plan your training and it's all really wonderful, and I'm going to steal, anyone here from Del Monte? All right, so last year I was in their presentation and they shared some amazing tricks for how they encouraged people to engage and learn around their new intranet. And before they showed those tricks, they actually said that they had to convince people not to use folders, and they referenced something that they found on my website. So I actually was going to walk out of the presentation, and then I thought, oh my God, there's me up there. So that was pretty cool. So now I'm going to steal from them since they took it from me. I just think this is so clever. They launched their new intranet in the fall, and this is why this was incredibly clever. So they timed all their training and learning events to go with things that were going on at the time. And then they gave them great names, SharePoint Toberfest, Collaboration, A Ghoulish Guide to Metadata, and of course SharePoint Giving, which I guess would be happening next week. So I think this was incredibly clever. Obviously, they're going to have to come up with new names, because one of the things we've learned about training and learning is you can't just do it one time, because guess what? New people come into your organization. People never paid attention the first time. They might need a refresher. So you do want to think about things that can be done on a recurring basis. And I am not averse at all to making them fun. What the Del Monte people learned is that food drives. And so all of these you can see are wrapped around food and holidays. So and apparently it's okay to have beer on their campus. When I worked for Dell, that was major no-no. So that's another thing. So now that we've got people trained, the other thing that happens simultaneously to encourage user adoption is making sure that you have a really good communications plan. So communications planning in just sort of 2 points. Number one, it doesn't end at solution launch. Anyone sort of think that that's the case? You're all here because you all know all these things. So the one thing I usually encourage people is normally when you have a consultant, they kind of leave after the solution launches, and that's not the end game for communications planning. It needs to be persistent, because remember, half the people weren't paying attention during that entire launch week, either because they were busy, they were on vacation, or they really, honestly, maybe they just didn't care. I know the solution was the most important thing, but maybe not to them that week. So you have to make sure that you've got messaging that repeats. So I'm going to share, these are some of my favorite stories. So at Russell Reynolds, they launched their new intranet, all SharePoint, of course, with a birth announcement. So announcing the birth of our new intranet, this is not the actual announcement that they used, but they managed to do something so clever. Global company, all over the world, they managed to make sure that at 9 a.m. on launch day, whatever 9 a.m. was local time, everyone had on their desk the birth announcement, announcing the new name of the intranet, and of course, just like any birth announcement, come on, had a candy bar with the logo for the new intranet. So everybody got food and a birth announcement all at the same time. And it was amazing how many people used the announcement, which of course had the URL to the new intranet. as an incentive. So another one of my clients did something. This is one that I'm not so sure I love. So you probably can't read this, but what this says is, see what's in your future, coming soon, change management. And they gave out fortune cookies to everyone in the company, and the fortune said, change management is in your future. So why did I think that was kind of dumb? So it wasn't really the right words. Change is in your future, but change management is in your future. I mean, but everyone loved the fortune cookies, okay? So the cookies were actually great, and they were all over the kitchens, but I don't think anyone really got what was happening on August 15th. So not such a great one. So here's another one that I really liked, but again, it set up some interesting expectations. So Eric and Senior Living was launching their new intranet, and they sent out an email that said, here's what our intranet is like today, and here's what we're getting tomorrow. So what does this set up? So I'm like looking at this going, oh my God, you better be sure they don't all log in at the exact same time, because they're expecting a Ferrari, and we now got to worry about that. Again, super clever concept, and people really read their email and liked the message. But again, you want to manage the expectations. So here's another video. So this website, by the way, is awesome. So Ellen Van Aken collected launch videos for intranets from really all over the world, put them on one website for you to see. And this is one of my favorites.
They have built a new machine. A machine with extreme power. An optimized digital engine of information with improved performance and intuitive workflow. Creating far better knowledge sharing and collaboration. Now it is here. Merging the business to one company, one power entity. Atlas, the brand new intranet for MAN Diesel and Turbo. Coming soon to a screen near you.
So this is really cute, played off of a movie trailer theme, and was very well received in their organization. Obviously, they spent some money. But, you know, what you can do with your iPhone in terms of creating video is pretty awesome. So I don't know that you have to spend lots and lots of money. I think there's lots of other things you can do. But we are kind of becoming a YouTube generation, or at least there is a generation that is a YouTube generation. They probably already work for your company. And so short, interesting videos are actually very engaging. And this was just something fun that they did. Warner Lambert did a video actually years ago that cost, as you can probably, if you saw it, you could see it didn't really cost them very much to create, where they made a rap video to encourage people to complete their user profiles. So it was they had a bunch of people who couldn't dance rapping in front of a green screen. It was absolutely hysterical. And the messaging was, fill out your case, we'll get out of your face. And so it actually worked, because they showed it at an engineering conference and had about a 70% sort of uptick at the event, because in the back of the room after they played the stupid video were about 17 kiosks where you could actually go in and fill out your user profile. So they had people, captive audience, and kind of wouldn't let them out of the room. We used the same kind of technique without the rap video at a launch of a new intranet for Department of Justice attorneys focused on asset forfeiture and money laundering. So think if it works for them, boring people, that it could work for anywhere. So I'll show you a few other persistent communications things that I think are pretty cool, and you're welcome to steal all of them. Now, I love this, but most people don't think this is as cool as me. So at the Nature Conservancy, their new intranet, which is actually SharePoint plus NewsGator, very social, is really about connecting people all over the world. It's a mission-driven organization, and they have a little mascot. The name of the intranet is Connect, and the mascot is Captain Connect. And the posters all over the company, all over all the locations, it's like having your own superhero utility belt without the need for superhero tights. I mean, I think that's really cute. I may be the only person in the room thinks it's really cute. So if that doesn't work for you, Weston Solutions, who's won a couple of Intranet Innovation Awards, has what I would call a combination communications and training technique that they call 30 for 30. Give me 30 minutes of your time, and I'll teach you 30 things you didn't know about using the intranet. And that can be how to find a person with an expertise that you want, how to upload a document, how to write an effective search query. And this is kind of a cool approach because, you know, you only have to come up with 30 and you can give it multiple times. It works one-on-one, it works one-on-many, and they can use the same 30 for 30 messaging in a lot of different contexts. Really, really clever. And it totally works. Totally worked for them. The head of training at Russell Reynolds did something also that I thought was incredibly clever. She created a Get Sharp on SharePoint web live meeting kind of thing that she held every Thursday at, I think it was like 11 a.m. Eastern, to try and make it not too early for the West Coast and not super late for people in Europe. And she structured it in a really interesting way. The first 15 minutes were a presentation on a particular feature that they wanted people to learn about. They did a lot on search, a bunch on creating your profile, things that they really wanted to engage people around. Second 15 minutes were asking people, well, what's going on? How are you doing? What are you able to do? What have you done in your business? What was incredible is for the first 4 or 5 months after they launched the new intranet, they had between 80 and 100 people on the call every single Thursday morning. And it wasn't always the same 80 to 100. And they recorded all of the meetings so that if you weren't there, you could look on the little calendar, see what happened on that Thursday, and play it back at any time at your convenience. So really, really clever. And for the team that had to put these things together, because it could be different people the next time, it's not like they had to come up with hundreds and hundreds of topics. There were a lot of repeats. So if you missed the search one this month, it will be coming back in another 6 to 8 weeks. And at Forrester, when they rolled out their hero system, they created sort of movie posters around the building to get people engaged. And again, this is another movie theme. You want to find something that works in your organization, but I think these are really incredibly clever ways to get people focused. So now I'll tell you one that I will not put in a slide because it's the kind of thing you kind of don't want permanently for the record. But I had a client that was... The only way I can explain them, and you'll probably get this, is in their office, there was not a single right angle. So all the walls were curved. They really considered themselves very management, new wave thinkers. And one of the ways that they wanted to keep communicating to people what's new, what's engaging, how we want people to adopt the new intranet, is that they created something that they called stall stories. And so you're probably imagining, what are you talking about? Or you actually know what I'm talking about. And that is that every Wednesday afternoon on the back of all the bathroom stalls, no matter which sex you were, there was a, hey, what's new on the internet? Things you might want to try. Here's what's going on. I'm not saying that you should do it. I'm just telling you that this was something that worked in their culture, and people thought it was kind of funny. So that's sort of secret number 8, is that we really want to focus on support. I think this is sort of a fundamental important thing. And the one thing I've learned about working in this SharePoint space is that it takes a village. One really great way to encourage adoption is to seed the organization with evangelists. Find people in the different business units, in the different geographies, who want to be your early adopters or are willing to engage and be your change agents. So Sarah Hazy is sitting in the front row. At Best Buy, they call these people ninjas. At Biogen IDEC, they call them Pumas, power users of Microsoft applications. So they have, when they launched Outlook and Exchange, they had Outlook Pumas. And when they launched their SharePoint team sites, they have SharePoint Pumas. When I described this and described the name when I was talking to people at DuPont, they started giggling when I said the word Puma. Because apparently there are two spellings of the word Puma. And if you're an engineer, Puma is the answer to the question, where'd you get that number? Pulled it out of the part of my anatomy. So If you're in an engineering company, I suggest you not use the Power User Microsoft Applications acronym. But the idea is to look for employee advocates. Change agents always work best if they're embedded within the business unit. At Biogen, they never actually had to encourage or elicit someone to, or force them to volunteer to be a PUMA, because people wanted to be first and wanted to have an opportunity to learn first. So Sarah, sitting in the front row, have you ever had any issues trying to recruit ninjas? So Sarah's advice is that you want to be selective. So just because you want to be a ninja? She says you have to know the difference between a cowboy and a ninja. So the cowboy wants to do their own thing, and the ninja wants to do the right thing. Excellent points. So having your evangelists, identifying who they are, and you know what? Let's go back to Mikey. If you can get Mikey to be one of your evangelists, I think you got a really good shot. I also look for evangelists. I read this article in the Harvard Business Review years ago that has totally resonated with me, and it talked about the concept of T-shaped managers. So they aren't necessarily the vertically, you know, the top of the food chain, but they have long tentacles. They're the people in your organization that everybody knows and respects, and if you can encourage them to engage, if you can make them an early adopter, they have a broad reach, and so they can have a lot more power than a top-down thing. So your evangelists can come from the top. They can also be the people at the grassroots. The important thing is to have people who are connected as close as possible to the business. At Eli Lilly, in the medical division, when you get a new SharePoint site, you're assigned a coach. And the coach lives in your business unit. They're the business IT liaison. And some companies call these people business information managers. So it's a person who's incented to ensure that you are going to be successful and that you're using the best practices that we've already figured out in our division. And having those people aligned with the business, I think, are really critical. I've seen this role in other organizations, and I think the mentality that they have, you know, thinking about it as coaching, and being at Lilly, when you get a coach, the coach is actually assigned to you for the life of your solution. So you have someone you can go back to if you're trying to figure out, well, how can I do this? What's the right way of doing this? And how have other people in the organization solved this same problem? And of course, they have a community of practice for coaches that essentially become, if anyone was here listening to Andrew Woodward yesterday, that become the virtual center of excellence. Praxair has that model too, and it's absolutely an outstanding way of making sure that you not only are engaging people, but you're continuing to engage them. So that's the other thing to think about, is how are we going to support people over time? At Praxair, they do hold office hours, so it's like the psychiatrist is in certain afternoons every month. The entire team who supports SharePoint is available. You can come to the office, you can call, but they're dedicated to providing support. And so it's really like having office hours if you're a professor. So you know that there's always someone available at that time. It doesn't mean you don't create training. It doesn't mean you don't write documentation, although I think we want to sort of consider creative documentation. But it really means that you're available on an ongoing basis. And the one thing that I see a lot of organizations make a mistake is on the day that they launch their new version of SharePoint or their new solution, they forgot to make sure that the help desk was ready. Doesn't mean that on day one they have to be able to do each level of support, because often the development team has to sit with help desk on the first couple of days. But to ignore them in the training thing, which I've seen happen way too often, and I have to admit I've made this mistake personally, so I won't do this again, I think that's really something critical to think about. Because 90% of the time, the initial problem is that they can't get on. And so that is something that you want to make sure the help desk can do. Take care of. So as I said before, I do think that wrapping all of this around something fun and engaging is a way of encouraging people to get involved in the new solution to adopt. So one thing I do want you to think about in this, incentives and rewards have their place, but for long-term sustainable adoption, the solution that you're building has to solve a business problem. It has to be relevant to my job. It's really kind of back to secret number two. You know, it has to solve a problem. This is, you're only allowed to use incentives and rewards initially. And really the reason you're doing it is to just get people to pay attention to something that's different. If it's not going to give me any value after your wonderful launch activity, I'm not going to come back, and you just kind of wasted all that time. So you're allowed to use these in the beginning because, again, it's also part of fun. So one strategy that actually helps, an incentive to recognize and reward people, is something that we tried at Heinz, which is that we got somebody, where they got an executive in Europe to agree not to answer an email if it had an attachment. So only internally, by the way. So if someone sent an email and had an attachment, there was an auto message that he sent back saying, thank you very much, I don't reply to emails that have attachments, please put it to a SharePoint site, send me a link, and I'll be happy to answer your email. Doesn't have to happen too many times before you see that that will work. At IBM, when they were rolling out Same Time, now IBM had been using, had collaborative technologies for 10 years, and I was having a huge difficulty in getting user adoption, until Sam Palmisano sent out a message when he became CEO saying, if you want to find me, you will find me on Same Time. So he was a big key influencer, was the CEO at the time, and what he did was model the behavior, and that's what the guy at Heinz did. Now, my understanding is that after we launched this lovely solution at Heinz, that perhaps people kind of stopped, sort of weren't continuously influenced that don't have attachments to email. And the reason it was so important to Heinz is that one of the reasons they were implementing SharePoint was because they had an email limit. And so everybody was over their limit. And one way to discourage that from happening, besides versionitis and all the other illnesses that you get from sending documents all over the company, they wanted to make sure that they were not going to have to buy a gazillion terabytes of storage just because people wouldn't control their email. So there's also sort of other fun things you can do. So Weston Solution also does, I think they're kind of into this theme. In addition to 30 for 30, they do 5 for 5. Give me 5 minutes of your time. Tell me how you're using the intranet. Tell me what problems you're solving. So in other words, they're collecting nice data for their metrics report card, and I'll give you a $5 Starbucks gift card. So it's a nice way of engaging users, getting interaction. You don't have to do this for everybody. They also did something very clever to encourage people to submit their, to create their profiles when they launched. They had a profile week, and they had a competition among business units to see who could get the greatest percentage of profiles completed during the profile week. And rather than offering a pizza party or something like that, they did it in conjunction with the United Way campaign. And the winning business unit was allowed to pick where $1,000 would get donated to a charity. So they got to pick the charity. So they combined it, you know, doing something good for us with doing something good for others. They wrapped an entire campaign around it, and everybody thought that was super cool. At State Street Research, we did an incredible and elaborate scavenger hunt to launch the new intranet. So we were building the solution for State Street, and one of my guys on my team said, wouldn't it be great to do an intranet scavenger hunt on the launch? And of course I said, oh my God, I think that's the dumbest idea. No one will ever participate. Well, little did I know about how clever Rob was. He created an elaborate game based on the board game Clue, and he had Professor Plum finding some financial document on some site. Everything was completely tied to their industry. Super clever, and I couldn't deny that, but I was absolutely convinced that there was no way investment bankers would play that scavenger hunt, and you have no idea how many people responded, took the quiz, and submitted their name to win dinner for two. So these people didn't really have to win dinner for two. They were already pretty much gazillionaires. But it was really fun and really engaging and got people to pay attention or at least try the new solution. Now, just because you get them to try it doesn't mean they're going to come back. Again, let's keep coming back to point number two. Still has to have value. But that doesn't mean you can't do something fun. And here's another one that I thought was really, really clever. So does everybody know the commercial for Kit Kat? Because this is kind of universal all over the world. It's like, give me a break, break me off a piece of that Kit Kat bar. So the theme of the launch was everybody got a Kit Kat bar and was encouraged to take a 30-minute break from work to explore the new solution. And empowering users, essentially everyone in the company, to take some time out of their day to look at what was going on new. Now, if you work in a consulting firm, you'd actually have to give them a project number because 30 minutes, yeah, I'm seeing people nodding. So that's what this really was, giving people permission to take 30 minutes out of their workday, basically saying you don't have to do this in your spare time. You can actually charge your time and do some exploration. And to make it a little more fun, they had a game to place the face. So they published faces and you had to sort of explore the profiles. And again, in consulting, really all we don't make anything. All we are people and what they know. So here is a really cool way to encourage a behavior, people finding, which actually has some significant value in the organization. But I really want to encourage everybody, maybe not here because there's not enough connectivity to make this work, but when you go back, there was a really cool video that Dan Pink, who wrote the book Drive, did at the RSA in the UK. And this, they made an animated cartoon of it. And he wrote the book Drive, which is really about what motivates people. And what you'll learn in that very, very short clip is that really that these things to kickstart and pay people to do things don't always work. That at the end of the day, people want in their work autonomy, mastery, and purpose. And I think that goes along with what we've been saying up until now, that it's okay to do an incentive to kickstart, but on an ongoing basis, again, it has to be relevant to my job, it has to be meaningful for me. And most of the time when we make a mistake with user adoption, it's because the solution isn't adoptable, that we really have to go back there all the time. So that's the other thing. So let's just say that you launch your solution and maybe you didn't pay enough attention to what the users really wanted and you're not seeing a lot of uptick. Well, guess what? You get a second chance because secret number 10 is that it's really all about listening. So what you now want to do is make sure that you actually listen to what people are saying about your solution. What's working for them? What's not working for them? So I launched, I have a TAP client, as I said, and we launched our a community site, a SharePoint 2013 community site last week. And all of these things I wasn't prepared for happened. So what we didn't do right is that we didn't set up the permissions correctly. We actually, we used an inherited permission set for a community site, which apparently you should never do, because what did all our members have permission to do? Edit page. How many people know what that really means? So guess what? So brand new users, never seen SharePoint before, and we were having them their conferences right now. And so we had a very short time to get them up and running on this new system so they could basically demo what would a conversation be like when we're not using our listservs that are being held together by chicken wire. Now we're going to do this in this very engaging visual space. So we wanted to simulate some conversations in SharePoint, and we're having people enter things. And unfortunately, I don't know if you guys had this happen to you, but Office 365 preview went down last week, right in the middle of my training demo session. So they had to do things on their own. So Alan was going to be a good, you know, the good child and start entering data in the discussion board. And he wanted to edit an entry he had already made. And he saw the little edit button in the upper right-hand corner and said, edit. Well, it's a wiki page. And he typed over what was there and broke the view for everybody. So nobody could look at any discussion item until our developers woke up. They were in Russia, so I had to get them on a sleep cycle, wait until they woke up to fix the view. And I would have fixed it myself, but I couldn't get on because it was down still for maintenance. So we heard that problem, and I, when I was here this week, went to the product team because Jeff Teeper is the executive sponsor of this particular client, so I've been getting a lot of attention, which is really great. And we fixed it, and it won't happen again. But one of the things is that I learned from that is they were also giving me all this feedback of what does the dot, dot, dot thing mean? And can't you hover over that and have that tell you things more? And they're giving me all these things that they want. And so listening not just to what they say, but what they're experiencing and how they feel is really tremendous feedback for me. Because not all of it are things that I can change, but they're certainly all things I can take back to Jeff. And I certainly intend to do that. So it was that was really great. But there are some things that we can change to make things easier for them. And that's why it's really important to get, you know, give yourself the opportunity to listen and more importantly, watch what people are doing. Because one of the things that I've noticed is that As a helpful hint, you should give people an opportunity. Know who the contact is on every single page of your site so that you really are creating a way for people to engage. So make sure that you can identify who the owner is of every page, and then get up out of your desk and ask people for feedback, even if it hurts. So I have to admit, I was hoping that everybody would really love our new solution. We had beautiful pictures. The eye candy was absolutely awesome. The site looked really beautiful, and the client said, "This is so beautiful." And then we had people ranging in age from about 30 to about 75 with all kinds of differing expectations and experiences with technology. And of course, every time you do something like that, something happens that you don't expect. So being prepared and being ready to listen to all of that was really, really important. So you do have to get up out of your desk and ask people for feedback. And so even though I didn't like all the things they were saying, I really needed to hear it. And so I think the other thing is that one of the things I've learned is oftentimes when you're trying to understand how people work and they will tell you how they're interacting with the information systems that they use today, they will tell you things like, "Oh yeah, everything's really pretty fine." And then you kind of watch them do things and you say, "Okay, well show me what you would normally do to execute a transaction." And they go, "Well, I would go here and then I'd scroll down here and then I'd look over here and then I'd come down here and oh yeah, there it is. And yeah, that's fine. It totally works for me." And I would look at that going, "You've got to be kidding me. You have to do that every single time? I think we can probably do better than that." So don't just listen to what people say. Watch what they do, because I think you can get a lot of clues by paying attention, watching people in action. So I have a client that says that's the anthropology part of your job. It's going out to observe users in the wild or in their natural habitat. And here's secret number 11, and that is that you're never done. So one of the really interesting techniques to encourage and engage users and understand where your user adoption challenges are to do usability testing. It's a really enlightening way of understanding all of the different opportunities for improvement. We're not going to call them things that you screwed up. These are really sort of things that you can do to continuously improve. So user adoption, again, thinking about it is not a one-time thing. You're really never done. And finally, I would encourage you that the 12th secret, which isn't a secret at all, because I'm sure it's why you're all here at this conference, and that is to talk to people and find out what they're doing. There's almost always something you can sort of take from somebody else. So I'll share another story. So this week, I was at a client that is the electric utility for Central Pennsylvania. And I don't know if you guys know this, but we kind of had a weather event on the East Coast 2 weeks ago, and they were the utility responsible for the 5 days of power outage in Central Pennsylvania. And one of the things that they were using SharePoint to do, actually, was manage all the foreign workers, give them assignments, foreign meaning people who came from outside their geography, to help assign them to outage locations during the storm. So they used SharePoint to entirely manage a solution that they call Storm Central. And it was absolutely incredible. People were engaged. And because it was so successful, because it was created, thank God, in advance of the catastrophe where they really needed it, they're now really on a roll in terms of rolling out their next edition. So what they're doing now, in conjunction with now that they've got a lot of attention to, you know, the successful solutions you can build in SharePoint, they're rolling out a new SharePoint intranet. And one of the clever things they've done is the naming. So the name of the intranet, the current intranet is called PPL Today. That's kind of one of those ho-hum names. The new intranet is called The Grid, which really works nicely given what they are. But the campaign around it is that the intranet is really the place where you do your work. They're not saying this is a collaboration solution or any of those blah, blah words. The grid is where you do your work, and the messaging is that you want to live on the grid. And so that's like, they get this like sort of super opportunity. And one of the things they're doing to engage users to initially try the grid is they've created a passport to the grid. And there's different activities that are actually represented by videos that they want you to watch. And after you've watched each video, they email you a JPEG badge that you can essentially collect passport stamps to demonstrate that you've participated in this activity to learn about the grid. So the campaign is called Passport to the Grid. Super clever and engaging. And they're going to allow people to kind of display their badges in their email signature so that everybody knows who's sort of been on the grid. So here's the 12 secrets summed up. And that 13th one is be careful about permissions if you're going to implement communities so that no one gets hurt. So that I also talk a lot about governance. And I learned from a client at Biogenidec the greatest expression to describe what does SharePoint governance really mean. And I think this relates to user adoption. If you want people to adopt, the solution has to really protect people from making a mistake. And the first rule of governance is no sharp edges. And what we had done is we left a sharp edge, and an engaging and interested user cut himself. Well, he cut everybody, basically. And that wasn't his fault. It was really our fault for leaving the sharp edge. So if you really want user adoption to work, let's add a governance secret, and that is make sure you've protected people with no sharp edges. And so we have a little time for questions, but I just want to sort of point out that I have some bonus material that you can get online. I'll just quickly step through this. These are sort of really clever and fun things that people used in their communications plan. You're not supposed to read them right now. People often ask me, well, what if we don't call it SharePoint? Okay, well, here's what some other people have called their intranet. Del Monte's is really clever. The cupboard where you can snack on news and information. And most of these names came up with a context. A contest. Perkins Eastman, I love this. They have the percolator. Now, unless your name has perk in it, you kind of can't use this one, but they're representing their social intranet like the coffee room. And so there's a lot of interesting and fun campaigning they can do. So here's a great thing. So I sort of packaged together some of my favorite resources about user adoption, and one of my very, very favorite things is Michael Sampson's book called User Adoption Strategies. And if you haven't read it, it's totally worth getting, because here's what's super cool about the book. The way that it's written is, here's the problem. Here's five different techniques you could use to address it. And here's when this one works. Here's when this one works. Here's when this one works. It's very, very cleverly written, really engaging. And I think if you haven't picked up some stories that you can reuse from what I've been saying, I think you'll find more there. Okay, so, this doesn't have the slide that tells you to fill out your evaluation form, so I think I'm just going to tell you, fill out your evaluation form. And I think we have a few minutes, so I'm hoping someone will do some sharing. Questions, comments, tell me your story. Oh, someone's going up.
Well, since you do have a lot of good stories.
Sorry. Oh, actually.
Since you have so many good stories for us, I was actually wondering if you have another one. And that was really about a lot of this stuff is like giving out gift cards and that kind of stuff. Kind of is driven from a U.S. culture. And that doesn't always necessarily work in French or the Scandinavian countries. Do you have any kind of stories you can share with us how you really deploy that in a truly global world?
So the story from Heinz, by the way, was a guy, they actually found an executive in Europe who said, I'm not going to respond to emails if they have an attachment. There was no contest or prize. What he was really doing is modeling the behavior. So they engaged an influential executive to essentially pattern and model the behavior that they wanted people to use. And I think that works really worldwide. What do you think?
But I was kind of wondering about the kind of the teasers and the giveaway, the badge fill kind of things. This is, I like it. I think it's pretty cool, but it's really from a U.S. perspective, and that doesn't always work. So that was
kind of
wondering.
Place the face and Kit Kat contest. You saw that the prize was
that was
Europe.
Yep.
So does it have to be a prize? I mean, over the long term, I think that incentives, they only work to get people to engage the first time. The solution itself better solve a problem. So the other thing that that we used that it was actually incredibly effective was to promote sort of clever things you can do on the homepage, sort of tip of the day, or did you know, or had you ever? And one of the things we did in my organization is, in addition to on the homepage giving people helpful hints, we also used traditional flyers that were kind of engaging. And one of the ones that was my favorite that was absolutely the most effective, on page one, there was a bunch of questions in bubbles that were asking people to answer them. And then on the back was, how would you find the answers on the intranet? So giving people the idea of, here's the kind of things you can do that we were never able to do before. And again, you know, if I'm having that problem at this moment, that's a really engaging way of getting people to think about things.
Thanks.
So thank you. And by the way, you can have a prize. So you were the first brave enough person to ask the question. So here's a copy of this book. So I know this is about 2010. But there's some useful things in there. Thank you very much.
Sometimes when we talk about user adoption, I like to talk about usability and branding, user experience and branding. There's a lot of folks who have had a bad experience with SharePoint.
Yes.
So sometimes being able to not talk about SharePoint and making a company SharePoint have that user experience that represents them. And sometimes I think that gets lost when we talk about user adoption is how, you know, that usability. And again, making SharePoint look more and feel more like that organization, whether it be warm colors. And again, I think usability.
Well, I think that's the point of the grid, by the way. And that's why I have that little extra slide about don't call it SharePoint. So at PPL, they're not calling it SharePoint. The grid is where you do your job. And there are places where you can interact with team members. There are places where you can interact with other people. And it's not SharePoint. And they have, they're about to launch 2010. They have branded the heck out of it. There is no way you would recognize anything as SharePoint. And what the business users have done, Storm Central has a completely HTML front end. There is no SharePoint in the front end. The back end is all SharePoint lists. But you would look at that and say, in fact, of course, you've probably already heard this because the first thing users say is, make it look like a website or make it look like a real web page. I'm like, well, it is a website. And so there's no way you would be able to tell that SharePoint is behind the scenes. And I think you're absolutely right. Creating a compelling user experience is really about two things. Number one, engaging the user and being relevant to what they're doing. And number two, solving a business problem that they have. And yes, it should look like it flows with their work, not like it's sort of what is SharePoint out of the box. Which, by the way, I don't think Microsoft ever intended that you would keep it exactly that way.
Hello. I don't have a question. I just want to share two stories about user adoption.
Excellent.
That I was in.
Can we turn up the mic? Because I can barely hear you, and I'm standing next to you.
Is it okay?
Maybe in the back. Can you make that louder?
I'm not sure.
Stand closer.
Okay. Is that okay?
Yeah.
Okay. So one, there's two stories, by the way, are in the Middle East, where they have some projects of SharePoint, where they have started to ditch Oracle applications and adopt to SharePoint. One of them is when we started for one project and we wanted to design the homepage and actually the site, we have two demos on different designs. And one something that's suggesting that we agreed with the board of management that we will let users choose which actually design they liked.
So users could pick the design for their site.
Yes. So we put it on a SharePoint survey. We put some small thumbnails, and they just grow bigger when you just click on them. And we told them, choose the design that you want for your homepage, for your internal homepage in the future.
So can everybody hear what he suggested is that they designed it so that people could choose their own?
Yes. Page. And when people have chosen, and they send them an email that's the design that that most of you have chosen, this is going to be your future homepage. So people get more involved into that one, which is one of the scenarios. The other one is another entity, a huge entity in Qatar, where they were having everything in Oracle, and they've ditched it to Microsoft SharePoint and Dynamic. And they call the project Dynamo. And everyone gets involved. They have just to submit their photo, and they have a badge that they can actually put it on their PCs, whatever. Uh-huh. It's called I Am Dynamo. That means I am using this system,
right,
which actually proves that if you change the name of the software, it's going to say that they're feeling that this system is theirs. They have flyers everywhere, and they have those stand-up, what they call it, slides or everything, everywhere. Dynamo, and they say that, and people are, they pictured some people who are pointing to screens and all of this thing. So I believe, yes, what you said is right about branding the name of SharePoint to another thing is making it more into identity for the people and make them more engaged and, you know, involved into the system.
Thank you. All right, so I got another book. You can have it.
Okay, no problem.
Sean told me I should ask for who lost the most money and give them something to take back, which I actually thought was a great idea. But you shared, so that's a good one. Okay, I think we can probably do one more. Somebody here was raising their hand. All right, if not, I'm here until the bitter end tomorrow. And please, now you've adopted me, we're all best friends, so let's sort of chat about user adoption. Thank you very much.